Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Nastapaye suavadresu
Nastapaye suavadresu
Nityam bhagavata sevaya
Nityam bhagavata sevaya
Bhagavati uttama sloke
Bhagavati uttama sloke
Bhakti bhagavati naistike
Bhakti bhagavati naistike
By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of God, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Purport. Here's the remedy for eliminating all of inauspicious things within the heart, which are considered to be obstacles in the path of self-realization. The remedy is the association of the Bhagavata. There are two types of Bhagavatas, namely the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. Both the Bhagavatas are complete, competent remedies, and both of them, or either of them, can be good enough to eliminate the obstacles. A devotee Bhagavat is as good as the book Bhagavat because the devotee Bhagavat leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavat. And the book Bhagavat is full of information about the personality of God and his pure devotees, who are also Bhagavatas. Bhagavat book and person are identical. The devotee Bhagavat is a direct representative of Bhagavan, the personality of God. So by pleasing the devotee Bhagavat, one can receive the benefit of the book Bhagavat. Human reason fails to understand how by serving the devotee Bhagavat or the book Bhagavat, one gets gradual promotion in the path of devotion. But actually, these are facts explained by Sri Narada Dev, who happened to be a maidservant's son in his previous life. The maidservant was engaged in menial service of the sages, and thus he also came in contact with them. And simply by associating with them and accepting the remnants of foodstuffs left by the sages, the son of the maidservant got the chance to become the great devotee and personality, Sri Narada Dev. These are the miraculous effects of the association of the Bhagavatas. And to understand these effects practically, it should be noted that by such sincere association of the Bhagavatas, one is sure to receive transcendental knowledge very easily, with the result that he becomes fixed in devotional service of God. The more progress is made in devotional service under the guidance of the Bhagavatas, the more one becomes fixed in transcendental loving service of the Lord. The messages of the book Bhagavat therefore have to be received from the devotee Bhagavat, and the combinations of these two Bhagavats will help the neophyte devotee to make progress on and on. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshuri Kitanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Nirupale Svayam Bhagavadamayam Dhanati Svapadam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Kriti Gadadhar Sri Vasudev Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So when we read about Narada Muni and the Bhagavats, the Mahabhagavats, or the Bhaktivedantas, who came into the home during the rainy season and who then stayed there for a number of months. So during that time, for a prolonged time, Narada Muni had their association. And he was assisting his mother in serving, and therefore he overheard the discussions And he also took remnants of these Vaishnavas. And they liked him, so they gave him some instructions. They also told him how to meditate at that particular time. The Yuga Dharma was a little different. Now, of course, means chanting Hare Krishna. And Narada followed these instructions. He tried, but he was only a small boy, 5 years old, so he assimilated it all. He understood it all, but didn't know exactly what to do until one day, early in the morning, his mother went out to milk the cow, and she got bitten by a snake, and she died of snake bite. So then he was all alone, 5 years old. He was alone with his mother. 5 years old. And then he decided to follow the instructions of the sages and to go into the forest and to just meditate on the Supreme Personality of God. So, I mean, that is extraordinary. I mean, that is something inconceivable, 5 years old. We remember that Narada then was in the forest and that he was meditating, and that in due course of time he saw the Lord personally, face to face. But then the Lord disappeared. So then Narada became very upset that the Lord had disappeared. And next moment the Lord appeared again and told him that you will have to undergo more purification. So you practice this sadhana very faithfully, this life. Otherwise this life you will not see me anymore. But then, if you do it faithfully, you will attain perfection. So then that's what he did. And then in the next life, he got a spiritual body. And in the next life, he is Narada, the great sage who can travel between the material, spiritual world, and all that. So it's an amazing description of what happened to Mara. What can we say? A little otherworldly. But the purport is emphasizing the service to the Bhagavats, to the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, and not once or twice, but 20 times or so, Prabhupada is repeating it. That's very clear. And then, when we are looking at the person Bhagavat, Srila Prabhupada, who carried the book Bhagavat across the ocean, on the Jala Dutta, the book that he carried was the Bhagavatam. And if you think of that, then we see that Srila Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness something that could be practiced here and now, in this world, by ordinary people, not by extraordinary people. Like Narada is extraordinary. 5 years old, we would probably not have gone into the forest, because we would have been afraid to go into the forest. We probably would have cried. We probably so that's another kind of level, another type of personality. But Prabhupada makes it practical by simply saying, follow the person Bhagavat. And then the person Bhagavat is just telling us, take the things from the material world and engage them in the service of Krishna. Just a few days ago we were discussing Satsarupa Maharaj's point, where he said that the world is like an altar and we are like pujaris. And one has to just take the things, purify them, and then use them for Krishna. And it was a nice vision to sort of see how we can go into the world and take the things from the world and just offer the things from the world to Krishna. And each time, but we have to take away some impurities. Just like when you have some bhoga, you cut some things off. Only chosen parts we offer to Krishna. So like this we can move through the world and see what we can offer to Krishna. And that, in that way, it becomes very practical. Because you can have a job and you can offer the job to Krishna by whatever you get from that job, by using that for a Krishna conscious life. Nothing will be spent for something that is not within the boundaries of Krishna consciousness. Then the job is part of Krishna consciousness. So everything is fine. Of course, we are not satisfied. You say, I don't want this job. That's another story. But then there is an instruction, the austerity of the mind. We have to be satisfied. But there's always something. It's like, I did not serve outside, but then somehow or other, there was a sannyasi from Holland named Surabhi Swami. Surabhi Swami's story is sort of a little, what can I say? The story was that he was he came to Krishna consciousness as a visitor. He came to Bombay in the temple, and he met Tamal Krishna Maharaj. At the time, Bombay was a construction site, and there was the temporary temple, and somehow he came there, and as a visitor. And Surabhi met him, and he explained that at the time Hans Kalman. And he explained that he was an architect, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj immediately, architect. Well, I'll introduce you to our spiritual master. He introduced him to Prabhupada. He said, an architect. Prabhupada said, architect. Bring some pen and paper. So they brought a pen and paper, and Prabhupada said, we want to make a temple in Vrindavan. Can you make a sketch? And Surabhi was a very gifted designer. Right? He was not drawing in pencil. He was drawing in pen. Whatever design he made in pen, and he would just do it in one line. He would not stop. He would just like if I would draw, it would go sort of one little scratch here, and then the next, and then it would not be straight, and so many things. I can't draw very well. But Surabhi just one line, just sketching like this, and then there was a temple on the paper, and Prabhupada liked it. So Prabhupada told him, he said that, this is very nice, yes, yes, very good. He said, I want to invite you to come for an initiation ceremony tomorrow. And he said, that's very nice. Yes, I will definitely come. He said, who will be initiated? Prabhupada said, you. And that was it. The next day, he was initiated. And then, then he got to do all the designs for Vrindavan, Bombay and everything. And then, at one point, there were some... He was married then, Surabhi. Married. But then at one point, there were some marriage difficulties. And then, and apparently, the wife was not satisfied with the husband anymore and thinking of someone else, whatever. So, Surabhi complained to Prabhupada. He said, my wife is And Prabhupada said, very good. Then you can take sannyas. And then next day he gave him sannyas. He did it to him again, two times. Two times he did it to him. You know, just sort of like, okay. And then, so then I was from Holland also, and then Surabhi came, and I had no idea what he was doing with me, but behind the scenes he was arranging it, that I suddenly, one day, I was in Mayapur, and I was helping a little bit with the construction for the 500th anniversary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some simple small things. And I stood there, and suddenly Bhavananda stood behind me. And he said, "Do you like construction?" And I felt it coming. I said, no, not at all, no. He said, "Good, you're in charge of all the construction in Mayapur." And then he walked away. And then I stood there, thinking about what that meant. Yeah. That's how it went. Later I realized that Surabhi had been behind me and had arranged it all. Yeah. Anyways, somehow or other, it meant many buildings, including the Samadhi, including the temple of Radha Madhav, including the college building, including the police station, including the housing project, including the electric distribution network in Mayapur, all the cabling and the substations and, you know, the feeder pillars and all those things, right? That's some of our electrical engineers here are familiar with. All that misery, gosh. So, in this way, my life unfolded, and I had thought that Krishna consciousness was going to be something totally different. You know, I thought maybe I would be doing kirtan a lot and study philosophy, give talks, and you know, and go on adventurous boat journeys on the Ganga to preach in some villages or something like that. I had imagined it like that. And then it turned out very different. It turned out completely different. Here I was like involved with construction, something, bricks, cement, steel, cables, you know, distribution boards and all these miserable things, right? You know, plumbing and sewage, you know. And this construction has been then returning in my life again and again. A few years ago, I thought I had really escaped. I thought, now I'm a sannyasi, now it's over, right? Now I just have to preach the Bhagavatam and just do kirtan and have fun, right? And it was like that. But then, you know, again, they got me. And they got me for Mayapur. And to make some sort of plan for Mayapur. And again, it was like visionary management and this and that. And then I had to make a foolproof plan for Mayapur, you know, everything for a big project, for a big job. And in the process of it, we had to consult experts in different fields. And at one point, this is maybe 2-3 years ago. At one point, we had a session about water management. And there was a PhD in water management. And some days it was about drinking water. And then we got about the sewage water. And then he got into it, you know. It was a PhD after all. He loved his work, right? So he's just like talking about the sewage and how we had to make the pipe, there was a certain correlation between the diameter of the pipe and the angle of the pipe so that the liquids and the solids would flow through the pipe, right, as one unit, you know. And he was completely absorbed, you know. He you've got ecstatic symptoms, as he goes. And Alice trying to think, my God, you know, what offense did I commit? I have to sit here. I have to hear all this stuff. Then I start preaching to myself. No, but it's not ordinary stool. It's my stool. So, in a way, it's transcendental. No, no, really. Anyway, I kept myself alive throughout this day by preaching to my mind. But it was austere. It was extremely austere. That was tough. That wasn't easy. I had not imagined that this is what it meant when the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, right? I mean, the book Bhagavat is all about Narada Muni and how he is 5 years old and how he is there, you know, meditating and this and that. He gets the darshan of the Lord, and then we get the darshan of the solids and the liquids in the pipe, graphically described. These kind of things, but yet completely transcendental and fulfilling the order of the Mahabhagava to create a transcendental city there in the middle of the rice fields. And somehow or other, Prabhupada said that these two were the book distribution and the construction of Mayapur were the two major agenda items of this movement. So that was not a small thing, you know. And somehow or other, I was part of it. So very fortunate, the solids and the liquids, you know. My good fortune. So like this. And then we were talking about making shafts, you know, where all these pipes would go inside, the sewage pipes and the electric pipes, different trenches. And then, of course, they fill up with cobras. They fill up with cobras because they like electric cables, cobras. Okay. Lots of fun, eh? Big cobras also. So, but then, then abhayam sattvasam sudhir. Then one has to practice fearlessness. I've seen those cobras in Mayapur on numerous occasions. I wasn't always courageous. When I was still in the Grihastha ashram, I was inside our room, and then one day I hear the voice of my wife outside and she say, quick, come outside, there's a big black snake in front of the door. And I said, I'm not coming outside. I said, forget it, you know. go for a walk, right? Go for a walk and come back in 20 minutes and tell me if it's still there. That seemed a much more practical thing. Stay inside for a while and the snake did go away, you know. It's a soul, the snake got it. Quite effective. What can we say? Not always ready for the heroic battles. But sometimes one gets confronted what to do. There's no way to escape. Then you'll have to rise to the occasion. And this is actually the nature of Krishna consciousness. To rise to the occasion. To rise to the occasion is really what Prabhupada taught us. Because instead of telling us, just sit under a tree and meditate, this is what the Mahabhagavats told Narada, the young Narada Muni, the son of the maidservant. Just sit under a tree and meditate. Okay. Prabhupada didn't start that program, sit under the tree and meditate. Prabhupada simply was was asking for difficult things. Difficult things. Again and again. Difficult things to do. And this continues. Prabhupada wanted the Chaitanya Charitamrita published in 2 months, 17 volumes. I mean, impossible, said the BBT manager. That's when Prabhupada said impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. Now, at that point, you know, his professionalism was, he had to put his professionalism next to his faith in his spiritual master and choose for his spiritual master. So that wasn't easy. He had to rise to the occasion. He had to suddenly choose for the transcendental. So like this is what the Mahabhagavat is doing. The Mahabhagavat has asked us, yes, to build that temple in Mayapur. He asked us, he said, in every house be a Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, here there is, that's good. Is there one in your house also? Yeah? Who has a Srimad Bhagavatam in his house? Raise your hand.
Who doesn't have it? We'll sign you up right now.
Yeah.
You, right? Anybody else from the side?
Okay. So, Sri Govinda is taking names. I'll handle the rest. You just take the names. Now, we won't do it in an aggressive way. We do it in a sweet way. It's very sweet. But we'll give you a little time to sort of organize the finance. But it's... It takes a little bit of finance, that's true, but it's not excessive, and it is a wonderful investment. Some people have one in their house and one in the office. Yeah. Some people have one downstairs and another one upstairs. You know, otherwise you have to carry them up and down all the time. So it's convenient to have one up and one down. Anyway, the point is that Vaisheshika Prabhu, who is like our acharya for book distribution, our great inspiration in book distribution. And he has started a program where when someone purchases the set, then he comes with the set. Not that he moves in and stays with the set and just moves into the house. It's not that then. You know, definitely, that's not my offer. My offer is not, if you buy a set of Bhagavatam, I move in also. And I'll stay. No, it's not that. But I will come to install that Bhagavatam in your house. With a special puja. And in that way, with special blessings. But then, you have to sign up for the Bhagavatam. And then Sri Govinda is taking names. We'll leave it like that. We won't twist your arm in one time. We'll twist it slowly. We will not force, but we will... The drop wears away the stone, you know? We will remind you again and again, and we write down the names. Because the Bhagavatam is such a wonderful asset that it will just change our home. And if we actually every day have some connection with it, a little bit, something, just every day, a little bit. Like, we didn't read a lot, you know, we read one verse and one purport. And who cannot read one verse and one purport? There are even books for the blind, so that excuse you can't give. Sorry. Now there are also like books for the deaf in sign language. Yeah. So there are books that are coming in all kinds of forms and shapes. So whether we are dumb, deaf or blind, doesn't matter. The Bhagavad Gita is there. And it is so nice because it is completely pure. You know, the whole day we get information at work. That's not pure. That's for sure. We get information on the internet. Well, you have to search for it to find what is pure on the internet. There's a lot of stuff out there that I wouldn't call pure. So the Bhagavad Gita is in this way is very simple. And you know, the point is we're chanting Hare Krishna, either in kirtan, and we may like kirtan, or in japa. We may or may not like japa. But then, the rest of the day, we live with our mind. Even during japa, we live with our mind. And then we live with our mind. Me and the mind, my mind and I. Okay? And the mind, I have sometimes compared it to a television, which is always on. Yeah? So you're in this room, and there's a TV set, and it's on. And it's playing things. And that's the mind. So it's kind of distracting. Because, you know, you get zoomed in. Because it's on. And you, again. Okay, get back to your business. Then you look again. I know on planes, you know, I'm sometimes surrounded by TV screens. 30 of them, you know, in one glance. I look there, and there's a movie. I look there, there's another movie. Then look there. So I'm saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And it's like Johnny Depp, you know, Hare Krishna, you know, anyway. There's always the family movie, the happy family movie, you know, full of jokes and this and that. There's always like some terrible battles where people get slaughtered and all these things. And oh God. What can you do? It's very hard to close your eyes all the time. So we get all this information. But when we turn to the Bhagavad Gita, then it's pure, and immediately it takes us away from the mental platform where we usually, you know, get drawn. So it is very nice that so if you read a little bit every day, just a little, one verse, one purport, minimum. Is that doable? Everyone. It's not that one member in the family. And we are doing it. No. Everyone. And if you're too small to read, or if you're, you know, then you have to get someone to read it to you. So even the kids, they should just nag their parents and tell them, yeah, I read my Bhagavatam verse. You can nag them like anything, you know. You have my... Because I'm a bigger authority than your father, see? So, yeah, you have my full authority to make him every day. Before you go to sleep, he has to read you your verse from Bhagavad. Otherwise, strike. Create a little revolution. This Bhagavad Gita will create a revolution in the world and destroy all the empires and influences. Anyway, that's what I kind of was thinking about, the contrast between our life and the lives of these personalities in the Bhagavad Gita. The contrast is enormous. I mean, Bhima, he's in the Bhagavad Gita. He's as strong as 10,000 elephants. I mean, we got a few weightlifters here, you know, like guys with muscles, with 10,000 elephants. I always say, that's stronger than Spider-Man. I realize that. And then, so we have extraordinary personalities in the Bhagavatam. And yet, although they're so different from us, they're role models in a way. Because they get in difficult circumstances and they choose for Krishna. And we get the same choices to make. We have to choose for Krishna. And it's like difficult choices to make. So in this way, the Bhagavatam takes us to the platform of pure devotional service immediately. And it encourages us to make the choice, to choose for Krishna. So it strengthens us. We get a lot of strength from it. Even if you read only one purport and one verse. But we don't do that. We don't do that. But that's what Prabhupada wanted. Bhagavatam in every house on the planet. That's what he said. Yeah. So I want Bhagavatam at least in every house of everyone who's here. And if it's not there, then we'll help you and we'll bring it for you. And the bill will settle. That'll be fine. If you can't afford it, we'll find a sponsor. No problem. We'll do a collection for you. Somehow, everyone's got a hand. It is said if you give someone, if you give someone a full set of Bhagavatam, that gift is like coming back unlimited. You sometimes wonder why someone has become a multi billionaire. Yeah. Maybe he gave Bhagavatam to someone. Yeah. It's a good investment in case you have to take another birth. Now you don't know, you know. I mean, you may go back. Got it this way. To wait, you know. Why do we have to wait? Give a Bhagavatam to someone as a gift. It's more than that. Comes back unlimited. Take 10 Bhagavatam sets and just go for it. 10 is an inspiration. 11. Give them as gifts. Something extraordinary. No? That's Krishna consciousness. It's not just ordinary, it's extraordinary. And one must do something extraordinary. It counts as like,
yes, I'm following four agnic principles. Yes, I'm chanting 16 rounds. How many?
You're sometimes sending 16 and a half. No, I'm sending 16. We measure exactly, right? We make sure. We do the minimum and stay there. No, why not do something special? Something extraordinary. Read the Bible. That's extraordinary. No, that would be nice. Anyway, that's time has gone by. It's 9:03, and it is. There is still things to do tomorrow. So we can start with the sun.
Yes.
Don't know how.